Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Happy Monday. Happy birthday, Chicago.
That's right. It's March 4th.
March 4th, as we learned.
Which we learned earlier on in the program is the... It's not just a date. It's the only date on the calendar that's actually in order as well. March 4th.
Right.
Move forward.
It's a state of mind.
Right. And that's why a lot of things in the political calendar were done on March 4th.
Makes sense.
Right. And just the founding fathers of the state of Illinois. Things that they could not have possibly imagined would happen.
Take place here.
The
sure.
growth and development of Chicago, right? This
Beautiful.
Little, you know, stinky patch of onions by the lake, a mm-hmm. confluence of a river and a lake. And then this, you know, I don't think there's any of this going, to be honest with you. All right, Philip Bump is with the Washington Post. We always appreciate it when he's with us. And a bunch of stories today coming out of D.C. We should try to get ourselves caught up. It was a wild weekend, really, because you had the president at CPAC. We played a bunch of that a little earlier on in the program, which was, woof, there were some moments. Not conventional presidential kind of repartee, I would say.
Fair.
I don't think I'm going too far when I'm saying that, Philip. You probably could safely agree with me on that. But I wonder if today, because I think one of the reasons that the president went on that sort of opus, 2 hours and 2 minutes at CPAC and some pretty colorful language and impressions and all the rest of the stuff that he did right there, he seemed to be very much on the defensive. And then you see today as Democrats announce all these investigations into close to a dozen of his business operations and dozens of his campaign and other folks that have been around the White House for the last 2 years. Is this overkill, do you think?
Is it overkill on the part of the Democrats?
Yeah.
It's interesting. Obviously, that's a pretty subjective thing to respond. I'll say that if you look at actually the list of them, and I walked through all 81 of the people and organizations and looked at who they were and why they were being targeted, there's a lot of sort of overlap from a lot of them. You know, so for example, there's this guy Peter Smith who tried to get Hillary Clinton's emails that he thought had been hacked from her server, and so there's three people that are just related to that particular thing. So you know, I mean, there's as I said, a lot of overlap. I think what this reflects more than anything, though, is the fact that for 2 years, Donald Trump got a total pass from the House investigators, that there was very little real investigation by the House or the Senate into the various allegations that have emerged both about Trump, Russia, and his business. I think what we're seeing is sort of a dramatic shift post-midterm elections and really taking a real look at those things.
Any surprises on that list for the requests? I guess it's just documents now. There are no subpoenas or any demands to appear anywhere. Is that right, Philip?
That's right. There are requests for documents and information. A lot of the people on that list are simply not.
The top five at five.
Excuse us. Hold on 1 second. We're having a technical moment
technical
today.
Technical problem.
I'm just happy to make the top five.
Yes, right? You aren't. Exactly right.
It's quite an honor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that the main surprise. You know, it's a lot of names probably that people haven't necessarily heard of, but once you read the details of it, you'll be like, oh, okay, yes, I heard about this particular thing. Some of the surprises, though, are people who weren't on there. So, for example, Ivanka Trump wasn't on there while Eric Trump and Donald Trump Jr. were. Natalia Veselnitskaya, who is that Kremlin-linked attorney who met with Donald Trump Jr. at Trump Tower in June of 2016, she wasn't on there. Well, one of her business partners and several other people who were in that meeting were. So there's some omissions. They say that there are probably going to be more of these documents in the future, more requests for information. But other than that, you know, it was sort of what you would expect from a thorough investigation into Trump, his business, and the Russia collusion question.
And it's funny because people were saying of the president that he has no idea what he's in for when he loses control of the House or the Senate. This was back in the fall of last year. And they said, you know, if he does lose both, it's going to be a very different presidency for him. But even if he loses just the House, which was a bit of a foregone conclusion going into it, that things were going to change materially for him. And this is the proof of it. I mean, he's going to be, everything about him and his presidency is going to be investigated. And it changes everything because it gums everything up. It stops things. But, you know, you wonder, as this is happening, you saw during the Michael Cohen hearings last week and in other cases, he still has really devout followers and defenders in the House of Representatives, people who are willing to go full Thelma and Louise with him, regardless of what happens. And, you know, you wonder, and I think it makes those of us out here who are civilians and not part of the process wonder if, are they going to take that political risk if they really believe they've calculated that it's going to be bad for the president, or do they already know that there isn't going to be enough here, the House won't be able to get to where it has to be to, you know, to really make a case?
I doubt it's the latter, simply because you never really know what's going to turn up, right? So the Democrats have cast a very wide net here. I don't think it's an unduly wide net, but it is a wide net, and they're requesting information, a lot of documents from a lot of different people, and you never know what you're going to turn up, right? I mean, if people remember, the way that Hillary Clinton's private email server came to light in 2016 was because of the Benghazi investigation, right? So the Benghazi investigation, which, you know, there were multiple investigations over a long period of time. One of the things it stumbled onto was the fact she had this private email server. So you never know when things like that might turn up. I think that it is still the case that people who are fervent supporters of President Trump have stayed with him through so many things that I don't know what the thing might be where they would turn their attention away from him. You know, I don't know that that's the Democrats' goal necessarily. I think it certainly is the case that there are a lot of things that Donald Trump has done or is alleged to have done which bear investigation. I think that that is a primary motivation for this new slew of documents. Another one, of course, being that 2020 is looming.
Before we let you go, another Democrat just jumped into the race today. You've got, it's at my last count, there was 3,000, I think it was.
Pretty darn close.
Yeah,
seems
who are
like
not
it.
Going to be running. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, we just went through this election in Chicago. We hear for the mayor's race, there's two, you know, there's you know, the first election, anybody gets 50% plus one, they become the mayor. If not, there's a runoff, right? So there were 14. There was no way that there was not going to be a runoff. So we're in the runoff thing. And a lot of people stayed home because there were so many candidates on the ballot. And you do wonder, and Iowa's different because Iowa's a caucus, right? But it's a different process. It's not like people going to a voting booth. You're literally going to church basements and gyms and to people's living rooms and lining up in corners and then caucusing. And then, you know, eventually people will move around. It's not like a one vote like you're going to have in New Hampshire. If there are, let's say, a dozen or 10 or even 8 candidates by the time you get there. I mean, it's kind of a cavalry call. It's kind of a mess. And that's how the Republicans ended up, you know, kind of all beating up each other and Donald Trump kind of coming up, you know, through that system in the winter into the spring of 2016. Do Democrats run the same risk here, or do you think people are just testing the waters?
Well, I think there are two parts to that question. And I think it's important to remember that the Republicans also saw historic turnout in their primary. So a lot of people came out. There's a lot of engagement, a lot of interest. And part of that was certainly the fact that Trump spurred people who normally wouldn't come out to vote to come out and vote. So that's the first part of it. The second part is that Trump had I wouldn't call it a strategy because I don't think it was deliberate, but he got lucky from the standpoint that when he jumped into the race, he took this hard line on immigration that built a really strong, fervent core of support for him, and that was enough to power him through the first several primaries simply because, you know, when you have 20% support in a 17-person field,
right,
you're going to win a lot of stuff, right?
Right.
I think that is where the Democrats might echo it. We have folks like Bernie Sanders who have this very enthusiastic core base of support that isn't going to be 50% of the Democratic electorate, but it's going to be enough to get him through a lot of these early races. If Joe Biden jumps in, he may have something similar. And I think that's the risk for non-Biden Sanders candidates, simply because this is going to be an election like 2016 for the Republicans, which rewards having that core base of support.
Can they buy Bernie out? That's the question I have. Is that what I think? There are a lot of people in the regular Democratic Party that want to put up a candidate that's viable against Donald Trump. I think they're worried about the AOC wing. They're worried about, you know, the young soft socialism that is occurring. That's you know, part of the rhetoric now, that you end up handing this over. And I think some of to use a term we use a lot about the Trump administration, some of the adults in the room of the Democratic Party want to see whether it's Biden or Klobuchar or somebody who's got a more typical presidential resume and more of a centrist and professional governance person be there. And Bernie is one of those guys that, that would be one hell of a television event, Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump. But, I don't think it's going to go the way the Democrats want it to go.
I think there's a real question, again, using Trump as an example. There's a real question as to if someone could follow the Trump path of the presidency, which is that Donald Trump started out on the far, far right, stayed on the far, far right, never tried to moderate his positions. And he benefited because moderate Republicans, who are very party loyal, said, he can't be that bad. I'm going to vote for him anyway because I'm a Republican. I'm voting for a Republican. But then he turned out all these people who wouldn't normally vote, who really liked him because of his stance on immigration in particular. And that was enough to carry, 78,000 votes in three states and win the Electoral College. And I think there probably is a case to be made, although I don't think it's as strong, that the same thing might happen with Democrats, that you could get someone like a Sanders who really, really turns out people who normally wouldn't even vote because they're super enthusiastic about it, or someone, who appeals to a particular demographic within the Democratic Party who might do the same. And then you have more moderate Democrats who, if you don't particularly like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's politics, but you're sitting there and you're faced between someone who shares her politics and Donald Trump and you're a Democrat, a lot of people are going to choose to vote for AOC, right? And I think that may be a path for a Democrat. The same path that Trump took to win in 2016 may be a path for someone in 2020, regardless of what their positions are.
It's interesting.
Philip Bump, Washington Post. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Eric Holder not running for president. Just so you're keeping track of the couple of people in the column that are not running, he's not running.
That means everybody else in America is running.
It just feels like more and more people who were rumored to be running are in fact running. And he's somebody who was rumored to be running, who is not. He's off of the sidelines and saying he's not running. You're still waiting on the Beto O'Rourke's and the others who have sort of said, we're going to make our announcement clear. It's going to happen soon.
Okay.
I mean, already 12 candidates by my count here.
I think Beto O'Rourke he's definitely getting in. Because he's acting cagey. If you weren't getting in, he'd say, I'm not getting in.
It'd be pretty easy to say that.
Because, if they came to me today and said, are you running for president? I would say to them, I'm not. And I could clearly go in the not category because I know I'm not. If you don't know, then you probably are. The same thing with Biden. I don't know why they sit that. I think they're waiting for the field to clear a little bit. Mm-hmm. And they may be hoping for the first person to get out. Who's the first person to get out?
Who gets out? I mean, Elizabeth Warren didn't get out over her missteps. You've got, it is a crowded field and may just stay that way.
I should be federally incapable of making a prediction. Like, by law, there should be some federal judge that weighs in and tells me not to predict politics because I wasn't right about the mayoral election. And I wasn't, I was right about Trump, but only because.
You saw the path for Trump.
Yes, but I wasn't right about him in the primary. I was like, there's no way this guy's going to. I was in the Pat Brady wing of, there's no way this guy's going to win. There's no way. There's no way. Wait, there's no way. Remember when it came to the Illinois primary, it was important that Ted Cruz won?
Mm-hmm.
I actually voted for Ted Cruz.
You did?
Yeah. That was a pretty weird moment.
Before the queso comments, so.
No, it was after. Oh, yeah, the queso had already been dripping down his chin by then.
Really?
Oh, hell yeah.
Post-queso, you voted for Cruz?
Yeah, because it was a way to stop Trump, because if Trump got past Illinois on that particular Tuesday, then his path to victory was like at 80%.
All but certain.
Yeah. So I went with queso boy. It didn't work out.
Would love some queso right now.
Not the queso. Don't go there.
Oh, it makes me so hungry. When you're talking about the queso, and it's almost dinner time, but I shouldn't have queso. Mommy told me not to have queso before dinner, because then you'd be a bad boy, Dad. Don't be a bad boy.
He's got facial hair, too, so now the dripping down the chin, it just doesn't work out the same way.
Ew!
I still hear my mommy telling me not to be bad.
I'm going to get queso for dinner.
Oh, that's right, queso.
All right. let's check in now with Kim Gordon. What's coming up at the top of the hour in the news?
It looks like Congress has enough votes to put up a wall over the wall.